in the middle of a war. One wrong move and... Boom.
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this week by welcoming back Clarence Brown. Mr. Brown, how are you?
I'm doing great, man, and as always, glad to be here with you guys talking Doctor Who.
Indeed, yes. Indeed. And I must say, Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
I'm very well indeed. Very well. Kiss, kiss.
Kiss, kiss. Thoughts and prayers to you.
Thoughts and prayers.
And Clarence, did you have any idea of what I meant whenever I text you over the weekend saying thoughts and prayers on a good trip back home?
I had no idea. I thought you were being sincere.
I was sincerely giving you a little nod to what you were about to watch.
Okay. You snuck one in there on me.
There you go.
It had two meanings.
Indeed.
Indeed. Wynn Grace is with us as usual.
Yes, indeed. Welcome, Wynn Grace. Glad to have you back. And Lee, if we have someone who may be watching us anytime or listening to us anytime who's never joined us before or joined us many times, what do you like to say?
Do your teeth.
Indeed, minty fresh.
But also, thank you. Thank you for joining us. We know you got other things you could be doing. Indeed, other Doctor Who podcasts you could be listening to. But you've chosen to spend this time with us, and we are deeply grateful.
Indeed, indeed. And Clarence, where could people find us?
Yes. Well, before I say that, let me say that you can support the show by subscribing, leaving a review, or, of course, telling a friend. If you have a review idea or anything else you want us to know, please send that in to discussingwho@gmail.com or discussingwho on any and all social media.
Indeed, indeed. So I want to also give a hello to Lei Jin. Glad to have you here. And I want to say that I went down not quite as big a negative rabbit hole as I did the week before, which was awesome to see. You know, there were still negativity out there, which I think is going to be around anytime. And before I move on, speaking of that, I want to read something to you and for everyone listening. I want to share this with you. Clarence, I shared this with you last night, so you already know where I'm going with this. Lee, you may not have heard this, so I am going to just start by reading it out. And what I am reading says, and I've got to resize my windows, didn't do that. There we go. All right. What have you done to BBC One's Doctor Who? Of all the stupid nonsense, why turn a wonderful series into what looked like Coco the Clown? I think you will find thousands who will not be watching Doctor Who. Thoughts?
And why is the Doctor American?
And why is the Doctor American?
Call back last week, guys. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're going to be misinformed, go big.
So I'll give you a hint. The more things stay the same, the more things change.
Oh, yes. That was not from this week.
No, it wasn't. That was referencing William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton.
Yeah.
The original regeneration, people saying thousands of people who will not be watching Doctor Who.
That's right. What have you done?
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
So I do want to give a little bit of feedback real quick. This is from our friend Sarah Warren. She says, I enjoyed the new episodes and I'm excited about the new season. I think the most refreshing change is that it feels like a kids/family show again. Mm. Something like Space Babies isn't high science fiction, but it's also not convoluted and dark like Flux. I think they're doing a great job of trying to reach a new audience and bring back some of the old fans. Thoughts?
Well, it is definitely about a new audience. I think that's one of the things that it may be hard for some of us as longtime fans to sort of get a grip on. It's going to strike us differently. It would have to. But what if you've never seen this show before? What if you have kind of a reputation? You see the toys in the store, so it must be for kids? So, you know, if, and it may be that that's been the jumping on point for an American audience. I don't know. I'm just throwing theories out here, but I think, I don't know. Was Boom an episode for young audiences?
I don't know.
We'll get there.
But if you look at it from the perspective of I'm a new audience and I've never seen Doctor Who, because I'm trying to put myself into that mentality. Mm-hmm. The first thing I see in the first two season or two episodes, as they're being branded, is the Church on Ruby Road. Nice little Christmas episode. Then you follow up immediately after that. You go to see dinosaurs, and then you go to the future. So you've got all these fantastical sci-fi elements. Clarence, sure. What do you think?
I think the show has clearly moved on from Tea Time. I know we keep going back there. Cool. I think you definitely can have those shows interspersed, or those type of episodes interspersed, but I do think it's probably more of a young adult audience now. But that being said, I don't really see the drive for trying to make it harken back to those days. It's kind of lost on me.
All right. Let's bring in something that Lei Jin said. I feel like this episode is heading into the right direction. The episode felt a tad short to me, not time-wise, but story-wise. I felt it could have done with a two-parter like Silence in the Library. Good deal. And that's about this one, so I don't want to go too far into this episode. But I do want to ask, Clarence, you said something about this is not Tea Time. And one thing I did notice in looking at social media is people are still focusing on overnight ratings. And I've seen YouTube videos, and I've seen, you know, social media posts and articles. Doctor Who's ratings are plummeting.
Yeah.
Thoughts? Should we even continue focusing on overnights?
It's a different world. Who's actually watching it on normal TV? Does that include streaming? Let me know. I don't know. Does that include streaming as well?
No, not overnight. No, it doesn't.
No, the streamers are famously very protective of their numbers.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah. When I saw people Kyle, it may have been you copying, just people on Facebook saying, you know, their numbers are in free fall. We're in the third episode.
Mm-hmm.
Falling from what? What are you talking about? I mean, I understand if you want to compare it to something else from 2005 onward, but yeah, it's not the same. It's not the same distribution. It's not the same. That's apples and oranges.
And you know what? Even though Disney Plus does not release their overall figures about how many are watching, they do give a top 10. And I know in the U.S. and other places around the world, Doctor Who is in their top 10. So
yeah.
I don't know how many that is, but I do know it's enough to get them into top 10. So I just thought that was interesting, because used to when we did a live review of a new season, that's something that I would say, you know, overnight ratings for this episode were blah, blah. That's up from blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I don't see a need to do that anymore.
I don't think it's a irrelevant point anymore.
Cool. So, Lee, I want to give a shout out to you, because I forgot to do this last week because we were doing two episodes. You gave us a new spoiler warning that's been heard in the last couple of episodes. So thank you. Brand new spoiler warning for us.
Thank you. And now that I've heard it incorporated the show, I wish I'd saved the original files, because I'd like to tweak it a little bit. But I may have to just rebuild it from scratch. But anyway, yeah, that's pretty much everybody who's ever said spoilers,
no
since
spoilers.
2005, saying spoilers. So anyway.
All right. So real quick before we move on. So again, thank you. I want to give another shout out to Tasha from After the Snap. She has joined us in the chat. Welcome, Tasha. So for everyone listening, if you have not seen Boom, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward,
spoilers. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Spoilers.
All righty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review Boom. Boom is the third episode of the 2024 series of Doctor Who, first streaming slash airing on the 17th and 18th of May 2024. It starred Shuti Gatwa as the 15th Doctor and Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday, with a surprise introduction of Varada Sethu, and I am butchering her name, I'm sure, to the Hooniverse. This episode was written by former Doctor Who author and showrunner, making his return for the first time since 2017, Stephen Moffat.
Who?
Who? Yeah. Blink and you'll miss him if you're in the library with Weeping Angels. Who knows?
And this is Boom, not to be confused with Boomtown.
Indeed.
Also.
So, Lee Shackelford, summary view. What did you think of this episode?
Well, it was certainly a change in style from the previous and, from the previous two. So a lot of people who said, this is for, they've made it for kids. Then we got this one, and I think we said, had to say, it's for the whole family. Because, as Ian was just saying in the chat here, it's about capitalism. It's about faith. It's about a lot of grown-up concepts. So, yeah, it's also about the doctor standing on a landmine. I mean, so I feel like it. God bless Stephen Moffat. He's given us an episode that appeals to a broad spectrum of audience. And I really enjoyed it. So, Clarence, what about you?
Oh, man. Thank you, Stephen Moffat. Thank you. this was a tension-filled hour. I know probably under hour, but hour of television. Having to live with the air being so thick, so to speak. I just want to say thick on the podcast. The air being so thick for the entirety of the episode. Yeah, I love that. Our doctor is in danger. He has to depend on others. He depends on his wits. And everything surrounding that, I think, was just well written and well realized in what I think may be Doctor Who's to date best use of the volume. I know we'll get into all that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So for me, I like Stephen Moffat. I love this episode. There's one thing I disliked about this episode, and we will get to it. The one thing that irritated me to the nth degree, and we'll get to it. But other than that one thing, I loved it. I loved the quotes. I loved the tension. I loved every other aspect about this episode. It was spot on. And I was like, oh, I just want people to say bad things about this, because if you're really hard looking for something bad, if you're saying something bad about this, because it was just well done. And I really, really enjoyed it.
In other words, if you don't like this, you won't like anything.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So we get the opening scene and we see the Anglican priest. Does anybody recognize them? And if so, where did we first see them?
The whole church army thing, I know, is one of Stephen Moffat's things, as is Villain Guard. Yep. Villain Guard is like his signature. A good man goes to war?
Good thought. The Anglican priest actually first appeared in The Time of Angels and the Flesh and Stone two-parter in season 5 or the 2010 series. This was the introduction of River Song, or reintroduction of River Song after series 4. So they are the ones that had her prisoner, the Anglican priest. So that's the first time we see them. So what did you think of the ambulance? And Clarence, I'll start with you. What did you think of the ambulance, of having an ambulance attack you?
This definitely makes me think there may be a theme this season around, we talked about magic kind of being a theme before, but maybe rogue AI might be a theme as well, because this is kind of the second episode we've had where AI gone bad, in a sense, even though they think they're doing good for us.
Yeah. It's doing what it was supposed to.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting idea. It kind of goes against against a Hippocratic oath, I guess, if you think about what these ambulance bots are doing in this episode. So very interesting there. And I know we're going to get into it, but just kind of the balance of what they do in order to prolong this war and how they treat the victims, I'm trying to equate it to something in current times. But as the need rises for the war to go on longer, they may not be so quick to just kill a person or end a person versus the opposite, you know, the other way around. So interesting dynamics there. And just this idea of villain guard and how they're kind of, these weapons are kind of used to just prolong war for profit.
Yes.
War for profit.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. Lee, what about you? What did you think of the twist on the ambulance?
It reminded me of people I know who are emergency responders who, you know, who talk about triaging at a big, you know, some kind of a big disaster, or, you know, big crash or something. And there's a lot of people, and the triage, you know, is all about figuring out who's going to go into the operating room first. Mm-hmm. And you don't pick the people who are injured the most desperately. You pick the ones who you have the best chance of saving.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which means that you are deciding in this moment who's going to die sometimes. Yeah. And it's terrible that there are people who either really thrive on that or people who leave ER because they can't stand it. They can't do that. What if you just built a machine to make that decision for you?
Mm. And, you know, it's interesting that one of the things that the doctor said is something about patients being expensive or patients not being cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, right. I thought that was an interesting nod of the cost it does cost or not cost or should cost or whatever. And I think this is when it's done well. You give just a tiny bit of social commentary and let the audience make up their own views of that social commentary of however they want to interpret it. You still bring it up, but you don't preach to the audience. If you do have Anglican Marines, you don't preach to the audience.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that is, of course, a point in itself that isn't really discussed too much. It's just there. We're soldiers and we're, you know, ordained ministers. Okay. Yeah. You figure that out for yourself. And Clarence brought this up about space babies, that had a great social commentary point, but it was brought up and then they left it. You know, you make what you want to of that, but, you know, we're moving on. We're not going to hunker down on it. So
a quick comment from Wynn Grace. He says the AI was just taking on the worst parts of human intentions and removing the filters.
That's how it works, man. Yep.
Interesting that this is the first episode that we get to see Susan Twist have a more profound role in the story, and the doctor actually see the person. This is the first time he's come face to face with a character that she's been playing.
Yeah, she's on a video screen, but
she was on the video screen before, he had turned away.
That's right. At least he's looking at her this time.
At least he's looking at her this time. Very, very interesting. Any thoughts yet on Susan Twist's character's identity? Because I have a theory that I want to share. So, no thoughts.
Yeah, I'm still wondering what happened to Mrs. Flood from from the
very,
pilot.
Very true, indeed. We haven't seen her.
She knows a TARDIS when she sees one. And anyway.
So here's my thought. Even though there's speculation in the Hooniverse that she might be Susan, I don't see Susan doing some of the things that we see this person doing. My theory is we named dropped the Ronnie in the first episode. This to me seems very Ronnie-ish of inserting herself in disguise throughout history, meddling and doing her experiments and seeing what would happen. This seems a lot more aligned to maybe being the Ronnie. So that's going to be my theory this week, is she may turn out to be the Ronnie. So that's all I'm going to say.
We've referenced a couple of times the fact that Gallifrey and the other Time Lords are all gone, and that was the work of the Master from during the Flux. And yes.
And with me saying meddling, let me say this real quick. Ian says meddling.
Meddling. Yes. Where have we heard that before? So that's interesting because it's hard to believe that the meddling monk would have is just sort of still out there marooned. I don't know. Yeah. A lot of interesting possibilities there.
So let me bring up a question real quick for the both of you that Lei Jin poses. I didn't quite understand the Anglican Marine angle. Was it a commentary on religion being in the lap of the government?
Or vice versa. I mean, as Americans, our history is we are the cultural descendants of British history. And British history has all been about the entanglement of church power and military power. It has been from the beginning, you know, and yeah. The things that have been done, carrying the banner of Jesus. It's just, yeah. So, and I think that's Moffat's way of just sort of pointing back to that, saying, you know, 1,000 years from now, it'll be the same thing. We'll just, why don't we just give the guns right to the priests and eliminate the middleman? And I think that's what he's on about. That's always the way I've always read that. I don't know. Mm.
Clarence, what do you think?
Yeah, there's the picture. Look at that.
Cosan, what Lee said, not a lot to add there, but yeah, just it's interesting how we explored in Doctor Who. Even when we go back to the what's the Angels episode we had before, where we kind of had the same thing.
That was the two-parter, Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone.
Yeah, I found it very Flesh compelling there as well. So definitely in I hate to point in light of what's going on in the world today. It's kind of interesting to see how that is a delicate balance that that has to be kept. And
we see the Doctor. Well, let me say this real quick. The camouflaged backlot. Well, the base that they showed, not where they stepped on the landmine, but the base that they showed was actually the Wolf Studios backlot that they had converted into the base of this particular story. So when we see that, we're looking actually at the backlot of Wolf Studios. So I thought that was really, really cool. And hello, Nicole. Nicole is joining us in the chat. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So Mundi Flynn, let's talk about her real quick. Varada Sethu makes her Hooniverse debut unexpectedly. Did either of you pick up? I don't think you did, because I think I asked you guys and you didn't pick up at first. You didn't recognize her as being the new incoming companion, did you?
I'd forgotten that there was one. So, and that it had been announced.
Got you. Clarence, I don't think you did either, did you?
Not after the fact. No.
Got you. Cool. I didn't either. I had to look at the credits to see if, you know, that's who, because she wasn't what I expected her to look like, because based on the pictures that I'd seen, I wasn't expecting short hair. So I'm thinking, oh, is that her? I'm not sure. But
I know we're probably going to talk about it, but do we think it's going to be the same character we're going to see later?
Question. Yeah.
Or is it going to be like a Martha Jones situation?
That's true. Yeah. Right. Well, he did say as leaving this episode, I'm going to be checking back in on you.
Right. Mm. Nicole says that she did not recognize her at first either. And RTD, I think, and Moffat has even said that wait and watch, or watch and see, which, you know, of course they're going to say that makes a good thing to keep you watching. So
When Grace says Monday does come after Sunday,
indeed.
It seems naturally, huh?
That, and if they get married, they can be Monday, Sunday.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. All right. So I have a question for you. Stepping on a landmine is a nod back to what episode from Classic Who?
Genesis of the Daleks. Yes. And kind of a great moment for Harry Sullivan, who sometimes the Fourth Doctor treated as being the Tin Dog, being the Mickey Smith of those days. But Harry flat out saved his life. And with the Doctor saying, just get away from it, Harry. You know, there's no point in us both, you know. And Harry, completely unflappable, says, no, I've got this.
Yeah. Harry, I'm stepping on a landmine.
I'm standing on a landmine. And he says, well, we'll work it out. And the solution is basically the same thing. I need to counterbalance weight and so on. They're able to put enough rocks on the landmine so that the doctor can step off. That's not going to work in this case.
This made me think of The Magician's Apprentice, where Davros, isn't he on the landmine in that episode, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, well, he is in a handmine landmine. But yes, you're right, you are remembering it correctly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was the hands with the eyes coming out of the ground.
Yes, yes.
That he was trying to get through, which was technically landmines too.
It's a hand grenade.
Yes. So Moffat said that he got this idea for this episode because he thought that the doctor got off a little bit too easy. So I thought that was just quite interesting.
Did it strike either of you or anybody in the chat either that this could have been a script that Moffat has had lying around for a while, you know, or at least an idea that he's had, because it doesn't really explore the relationship between the doctor and Ruby. We don't really learn anything more about either of them. It really could have been written for the 12th Doctor and Clara. It could have been, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just, I just think it's interesting that it works so well for the two of them, but neither of them are, as personalities, are essential to it.
It's funny you mention that, because it really makes me think of Clara when you think of how Ruby Sunday was so adamant on saving the doctor.
Yeah.
She hasn't been doing this long. Already she's exhibiting doctor-esque
that's right.
Moxie or determination.
You can't stop yourself. Yeah. I forbid this. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
But answer me this. Do you guys think that an episode where you can insert in your headspace any former doctor actor in that scene and it still work, to me personally, I think that's good writing. If I can take any former doctor and say they would work in that episode, that means you're not writing specifically for that actor. You're writing for the character. Thoughts?
Yeah. I also think that gives a high opinion of our doctors, because to me, this is all hanging on how well Shudi can deliver the performance and make it believable and sell it. Because it's basically we're in one room the whole time. We're not going to different planets. We're not going
standing
to different
in
set
one
pieces.
Spot the whole time.
I mean, yes,
yeah.
So it does come down to excellent writing and also the actors just performing off the charts in the episode to make it all kind of work.
Indeed, indeed. Mm. So Nicole adds that it did have echoes of Capaldi and Clara, but she loves that era, so she was happy. So
yeah,
awesome. So speaking of Ruby, let me ask you guys this question. What did you think of Millie Gibson's performance overall in this episode? Clarence, I seem to be starting with you several times, but I'll keep it going. Starting with you, what do you think?
Oh, as I just mentioned, I thought she did an excellent job. She was dependent on to be, you know, we talk about how Hartnell was older and we had to have a young strapping lad to come kind of do the heavy work. She was doing the heavy work. The doctor couldn't move. He was in one place. Now, it was a lot of what the doctor was able to do in this episode was a lot to do with his intellect. But by the same token, Ruby was the one out there helping him, you know, being his hands and feet to try to figure this thing out. So I really, love the dynamic of them kind of working as one in this episode. And I thought she did an excellent job. You know, we just mentioned the scene where she wouldn't back down. She was determined to save the doctor. And it says a lot about, you know, as much as we say her character didn't develop that much in this episode, but it does say a lot about the type of character she may be going forward.
I'm still thinking about Clarence's remark earlier that she's sort of falling into the pattern. This is what the doctor's companions do, is that they start slowly becoming the doctor. And I really appreciated that about this script and about her performance in it. But, you know, it's Judy's episode. It's going to be showcasing this actor and what he's capable of with his face. And
so,
if I had a hat on, I would take it off. Yes.
Let me segue into my next question.
Please,
Lee, what do you think of Shooty's performance in this episode?
I figured that's where you were going, so I thought I'd just go ahead and segue. Yeah, it's just spellbinding. And if anybody had any doubts about him as an actor, I think we can now put them to rest, because it's very, very difficult to do this kind of thing. It's almost as difficult as doing an episode in which you're the only actor in it. Since we've just done you just dropped our review of Heaven Sent. You know, this kind of thing where you have a very gripping story to tell with your face and your voice. It's extraordinary. And I just, if I hadn't been an admirer of his before, I would be after this, which is why, you know, I think a lot of people are saying, for heaven's sake, why didn't they lead with this?
Yes.
I don't know, but yeah.
Mm. Clarence, what about you? What did you think of his performance overall?
I'm co-signing everything that Lee said. I'll also add that this story could be done as a play on a soundstage in front of an audience. So with that in mind, the way he had to sell the story, added to that, he can't move. It's all his expression, the determination on his face, the looks, the glances, the connection, the crying even. He just kind of does it all in this episode.
You know, he did something that and he's done this a little bit before, but he really did it in this episode, something that Matt Smith was awesome at, which is going from youthful one moment to ancient in the next moment. And he did a wide variety of emotions, from irritation to horror to despair to joy to all of that. And it was all communicated, like you said, from his face, from his eyes, from his tone of voice.
His voice.
All of that was done brilliantly. And like you said, if anybody had any doubt that this guy could carry the Doctor, I go back to what I said. This is the first person since David Tennant that I immediately accepted as the Doctor in his first initial scene. So this guy can act, and he's awesome. So that's my thoughts. What did you guys think of the song? You know, we've had singing seemingly in every episode.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on the song, the Skyboat song that he was singing?
Mm-hmm.
I wish I would have wrote down the lyrics, because what they said seemed interesting, but I did not write them down. Yeah, I did think to myself, are we going to sing in every episode now? Is that just a thing? But here it aided in the story. It made sense why he was doing it. And, you know, it was a fun moment. I'll take this anytime over the shenanigans we got in the previous episode. So I love the singing here. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
And
if you want to go looking for the lyrics, there's a whole raft of them, because the song has mutated over the years. It's very old.
And
every new version of the lyrics changes the meaning of it completely. It's something to think about. But yeah, Nicole is bringing up that this is the tune that the Master played kind of obscenely on the Second Doctor's recorder.
And Second Doctor also, this was the song that he always played on his what?
On his recorder.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I seem to have found my recorder.
I didn't know that he ever got so far as playing a tune, but the Master did, having absconded with the Second Doctor's recorder anyway. Yeah. But yeah, it's a lovely song, and I like the idea of the Doctor. You know, we were just talking in Heaven Sent about the Doctor having a place that he goes inside his own head to figure things out. And what we're getting here is a way that the Doctor calms himself down. He says lowering his blood pressure, that this singing is his thing. And I like that very much. Yeah. After the snap just said, I wasn't looking at this, but yeah, after the snap just said, this is his thing. I love it.
Yeah. I do too. And anytime, whenever I was doing my research for this and I saw the fact that I could bring up the recorder. I was like, oh, yes, I can finally talk about my recorder. Yes.
Burn the recorder.
All right. So I'm just ignoring that you said that. And I'm going to say, Janet Hall, welcome. I see that you have joined us in the chat. Welcome, welcome. Glad to have you here. And I want to also mention one of the lines that I just thought was really, really cool was, it's going to be a moment. Yeah, it was almost comical, but it showed his irritation. That was just cool to me.
Right. Yeah. Let me call out something else from the chat here, if I can, because we got a great crowd in here tonight. Welcome, welcome, one and all. But several people are saying, we're going back to the comment that I'd heard other people make, that maybe we should have led with this, certainly instead of Space Babies, even from people who really like Space Babies. And this conversation is making me think that if part of the repositioning or the reimagining of Doctor Who, to whatever extent that's going on for the purposes of making this a Disney show, that part of what we're pushing is that the Doctor is no longer burdened, that he's free. We get that beautiful speech about his freedom the other day, and that he's in the previous episode, and that he's out having fun. And if we started with this episode, we wouldn't get that up front.
Mm. Good point.
I think that's one of the reasons why that impetus took precedence, and that's why you get Space Babies first. I don't know. That's just my random thought about this. Wonder what other people think about that.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a heavy episode in a lot of ways, and I think for me, just knowing the tone of what the show has been and what it can be, I would have been fine with it. But as you said, for new people coming on, I think it would have shocked them just as much as I think Space Babies did. So I don't know. We need happy medium in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Kyle.
No. Please go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know if this would have been the first one to show just because it's so heavy, but I do think it's a great episode. But also, it kind of worries me because Moffat wrote this one. He didn't write the last two. I don't know how many more he's writing this season, but if the tone just goes back to left field in the next episode, I'm going to be a little worried about what happens.
Well, I think, no spoilers, but from what I've seen of no spoiler reviews, just the ratings of reviews, all positive that I've seen on this next one. And I think the next one is supposed to be even darker than this one. More hauntingly dark, I believe. So this is one of the episodes, I think, that RTD has said is one of his favorites to write of all the things he's written. So,
okay, well,
you know, that's a lofty thing to say, but there you go. So let me ask you guys this. When did you realize there was a twist, no pun intended, to the episode? In other words, when did you realize they were fighting nothing? Or did you realize?
I don't know if I realized it up front, but it's very strange that you never see who we're actually fighting. They made the mention of Falk at the beginning of the episode, that it may be the Falk that they're fighting. And then, you know, that gets kind of shot down pretty quickly. So, yeah, I guess I didn't get it initially, but I was kind of suspicious on not seeing who the actual enemy is up front.
Mm. Lee, what do you think?
I wondered early on, and so I was just going with it and gratified when it was revealed. And looking back on it, it makes me think about my comment sometime back that I often wonder, sometimes the show will give us the writers, the producer, will give us a story that seems to work pretty well on its own, and then there's also a bug-eyed monster in it. And I often think, I'm not sure the story actually needed that, you know? And this time, I thought we were going to get it, and it wasn't there. And I thought, cool.
Yeah.
We didn't need it, and it wasn't there. Thank you, Stephen.
So this is one of the reasons I love Stephen Moffat's writing, because to date, I have watched this 4.5 times, you know, four times fully through, a skip around time through right before we got ready to record. And if you go back and you watch it after you already know how it's going to end, he tells us at the very beginning, we just don't realize it, what's going on by some of the things that the doctor says, because he asks, you know, he makes a reference of when Ruby is looking at her first, you know, sky of an alien planet, he makes reference to this is a being an empty planet. And then when he first meets Mundy Flynn, he says something about, oh, the Castalians or whatever their name is. You know, tell me about them or something to that effect. Mm. And with this knowing, like, kind of snark a little bit, like, oh, yeah, tell me about them.
Tell me what you've heard.
Yeah. You know, so knowing then that they didn't exist, he knew all along. And Moffat, to me, planted those seeds all along. So just why I love Moffat. So anyway, quick question before we move on. I have one other thing to talk about that I want to bring up. But before I bring up my thing that I want to talk about, what did you guys think, or any other things that you want to bring up before I bring up my one thing, which is the thing I didn't like?
Do we know who is behind Villengard, the weapon manufacturer? Do we know any more about that company? The whole by the compression thing, once I saw compression saying or her compression saying, that made me think of the Master. So do we know anything about Villengard?
We know that the Doctor describes them as being a planet at the center of the universe, whatever that is, and that they are ancient, that they've been doing this kind of stuff. They were called with the Terror of Seven Galaxies or something like that, that they've been doing this for a long time. And in the Doctor dances, when I always thought a great moment of cool for the Doctor is that, you know, he says he's been there once. And Captain Jack says, yeah, their main reactor blew up and, you know, destroyed everything. And the Doctor said, yeah, like I said, I was there once.
Yeah. So the Doctor dances from 2005. That was the first time we heard from them. The last time I believe we heard from them would have been Twice Upon a Time.
Yes.
The planet where Rusty was, that the Doctor and the Doctor went, that, you know, toward where they were meeting the testimony and all that good stuff, that was Villengard.
Yes. Mm. And that was so Stephen Moffat's first canonical Doctor Who story and his last one in the original run. So Villengard bookends his contributions to the show. So here he is again with Villengard. So,
So any other things, Clarence, do you have any other things before I get to that one last thing?
I don't think so. What do you got? So do you have anything, Lee?
I was quite taken by this line. And when the Doctor's trying to explain why he won't just blow up if this is a quantum explosion, he says, I am a higher dimension life form. I am a complex space-time event. Wow. And I buy it. I think, thank you. That's I'm liking it. Yeah. Is it canon ripping? I don't think so. I am a higher dimension life form. I am a complex space-time event.
I buy it.
Great line.
I just love that line. So let your head spin on that.
We did not mention Ruby Sunday and the additional snow vision thing we had in this
Keeps
episode.
Happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
The what now? The what?
The snow snowed. Vision?
The snow. The snow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was interesting, and that it stopped. That was interesting too. What did you guys think of Splice, the child?
I don't think I garnered anything beyond, you know, what was right there on screen.
Okay.
Was there some secret meaning?
I like the relationship with her father, whose name is Vater, which is German for father. That's a little dead on. I like the fact that she was there to be the object of his concern and his love, and that's ultimately going to save the day. But as a character, she's just sort of there. She's after the snap saying she took me out of it. Yeah, it's
see, that's why I love Tasha. I just love her thoughts because I am so right there with it. This is the one thing I hated that character.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Why? Why did she take you out of it?
You can't hate.
She was, and I, Janet, I totally agree with you. Janet says gratuitous. I felt she was gratuitous. It's not the actor's fault. I'm sure she played it the way she was told to play it, obviously. But every time she said, daddy, my daddy, my daddy, it made my, it was like nails on a chalkboard. And I'm so sorry for any of you who are parents that are watching this. I don't mean to be, I'm not being mean to a kid by any way.
Yeah, but, you are.
Yeah, I am. Because when she, when she was running toward the doctor and I'm like, if you blow him up, oh, I hope you get blown up too.
Oh, no. Wow.
I'm sorry.
I'm more with Lei Jin, who says the doctor brought and took away nothing. I think I can go along with that. It's just she was simply there to serve the story purposes. And that's, yeah, then that's too bad. That's, you know, it's just, and we've seen very winning performances from young actors put in that kind of position before in these stories. We just didn't have it here. So just like, yeah, I can't right now. I can't think of what her face looks like. You know, nothing. Just
right.
Let me add. There is an interesting component about the how faithful they are to their religion and how much they believe in their religion. Because when it's brought up that, oh, the father is dead, and then they kind of made the comment, dead? Question mark. You know, he's living on in the next phase of what they really believe, which I'm assuming is heaven or whatever. So she didn't even really grieve in this episode, as you would expect, because she is so such a proponent of the religion that they're following that she is already thinking that he's enjoying himself in the afterlife. And as an AI, I don't know how that works. But yeah, she never grieved in this episode, which I found kind of interesting.
Yeah. You know, I'm reading the chat and you know, Janet said it made no sense to be there. Wingrace says maybe she would have been better with a gas mask. Yes, are you my daddy? I would have liked Mommy. That. Daddy! Oh, yeah, I'm totally liking
Benny?
That. Benny, yeah. Tasha says, I really think family is the point of the season, so she needed to be there. And Lei Jin says she acted younger than she looked. She seemed very naive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Nicole says in her mind, her parents weren't gone, but that's what she was taught. Made sense to me, especially as a younger person. I get that. But really, this part that just got me was when they're having this tense scene with the ambulance and the dad hologram starts showing her pictures and she sits down and starts like, oh, look, I'm going to look at pictures. I'm like, really?
You really hated
her. I once you frame it that way, I think, yeah, if she were four,
yes,
I would say maybe.
Yes. You know, again, she seemed, the actor was acting like she was 3 or 4 years younger than she looked. So either they cast too old.
Right.
Oh, please don't. I don't want to see her. Please.
Well, and Nicole says we all grieve differently, which is true. It would be perfect. It would make perfect sense for her to simply be in shock at
true.
This point. You know, so that doesn't mean she's going to burst out crying.
True.
She could be stunned. Oh, well, I guess he's in heaven now. You know, that's credible. But still, it's just, it is. It's a peculiar choice. So
before we move on to our finals, whatevers, let me ask you guys one other thing. Do you like how Doctor Who in this episode framed religion? Because I know religion can be a touchy subject for a lot of people. Do you think Doctor Who went over the line, didn't go over the line, held the line, whatever? Thoughts?
I think we had this kind of similar discussion the last time. We reviewed, that two-parter. I love them exploring the possibilities. That's what I think sci-fi does for you. Not telling us how we should think one way or the other, but just kind of exploring the possibilities. And we know the Crusades happened. That's something that actually happened. So as far as them being a military wing or force, I don't think that that's too much for a stretch.
I could, and maybe I should write a book. I just, this has been Doctor Who's sort of stance from the beginning, and to the greatest extent possible, they've tried to explore it, which is a woke perspective, whether people like it or not. So when people are saying, when did Doctor Who get so woke? I think, dude, go back to the 70s and start watching this show. One of the lines that jumped out of this at me was the Doctor talking about their faith. He says, faith, it's the magic word that keeps you from never having to think for yourself.
Ooh.
That's a pretty cold indictment, but that is the point that Moffat is up about with the Anglican soldiers. I wrote a play about Booker T. Washington and W.B. Du Bois in sort of in a fantasy landscape where the two of them got to talk and really debate. And in researching that, I was really struck by this, that one of the things that distanced Du Bois from a lot of the faithful in Black America was saying that the reason why the Black man will never free himself is because he's waiting for Jesus to do it. A lot of people didn't like that. And a lot of people said, my God, you're right. It's hard. It's complicated. But here is an avenue where they have the opportunity to address things like that. And that's what they're doing. But yeah, I think Doctor Who always has. Mm.
I didn't think that they went over the line. I actually liked how they handled it, because I think the Doctor recognized the importance of faith. Now, the scene that he had at the end with the little girl, I liked. And I liked the fact that she's telling him, you know, my dad's not gone. He's just dead, and whatever, however she said it. And his response to her was more of, I may not like having the faith, but sometimes I know I need it to, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like the nod where he didn't seem too old to have a different opinion. And I liked that.
Right. And I think it's very interesting. One of the things that little moment made me think of is that he has extraordinary faith in people, that he trusts people that he's just met. And he has no evidence to base that on. So whether he likes it or not, he's a man of faith.
Well, you know what? I do know whether he likes it or not. I know one thing he will always like is fish fingers and custard.
Exactly. That's his favorite.
Indeed.
Sending people galloping back to wherever they can get episodes of 2005 going forward to find out what the heck that was about. So,
All right. So let's go ahead and get into our finals, our final ratings, or whatever the case may be. So let's go into our favorite quote. And before we do that, I want to say hello to Larry Irby in the chat. Hey Larry, good to see you in the chat. Glad you could join us. And if you are in the chat, when we get to final ratings, if you would like to give your ratings out of 5, let us know. But for favorite quote, Clarence, I'll start with you. Favorite quote.
Give it time. Everywhere is a beach eventually, which I'm not sure what that means, but I thought it was cool.
Yes, indeed.
I heard that as being about erosion, I think. That's the way I heard that. I
mean, what if there's no water? I don't. Okay.
Yeah, it does require something
it sounds good. That's all. It sounds that good.
Yeah.
All right, Lee, favorite quote.
I'm a higher dimension life form. I am a complex space-time event. I'm always going to love that.
I love that too. All right, my favorite quote. I'm a lot more explosive than I look, honey, and I know how I look. I will shatter this silly little battlefield of yours into dust, all of it, in a heartbeat, into dust. I love that.
Yeah.
All right, favorite scene. Favorite scene, Lee Shackelford. What say ye?
It's It's not because it was at the beginning of the episode and I thought things fell down afterwards, but I just really loved the byplay between Vader and Kanto. Mm. And I just, not Kanto, Monday. Yeah. I just really enjoyed that little byplay. And it reminded me of some of the best character writing of Russell T. Davies, too. So, you know, there you go.
All right. Favorite scene, Clarence Brown.
Mine is going to be Ruby's refusal to not help the doctor. Yeah. She didn't want to get away. She got up close, personal, in his face, and was there for him. Maybe a little bit too early for that, but all the same, I thought it was a great moment.
Okay. For me, I think that first scene from the doctor running out of the TARDIS into the point of where he is putting his foot down, where he's balancing himself. Mm. I think that was all of his scene acting through that was phenomenal. I mean, we could say Rest was phenomenal too, but I was really happy with that because I have horrible balance. I'll blame it on my hearing, but I have horrible balance. So whenever I was just imagining him trying as an actor to balance just for a little while and just maintain a balance, I'm like getting like the eebie-jeebies of I can't do that. So that's my favorite scene. So final rating, and before I turn it over to final rating for us, we did get some final ratings on a chat that I did on our Facebook page. So Janet says 3.5 landmines out of 5. Kevin O'Brien says 5 Anglican Marines out of 5. Kath Stahl says 5 Banana Groves of Villengard out of 5. And Ian Williams, who's also in the chat, says 5 booms out of 5. And I'll go ahead before we get and give Tasha from After the Snap says 3.75 out of 5 Who Companions. Lee Jen says 4.25 out of 5 landmines. Nicole says 5 out of 5 smelted bodies.
Oh, boy.
Janet says what I just said, but I'll say it again, 3.5 out of 5 landmines. And same with Ian, 5 boom out of 5. And Clarence Brown, what say ye?
Oh, man. I'm going to give this 4.5 rogue ambulances out of 5.
That was a twist. All right, Lee, what say ye?
You've reminded me that I had kind of the same problem with Splice, but it didn't bug me that much. So I'm going to give it 4.9 video twists.
All right. When Grace says 4.85, I was being slow thinking of a clever thing out of 5.
It's and me every week.
Larry says 4.5 fizzes out of 5. Awesome. So for me, I'm going to give it, just bear with me, I'm going to give it 2.5 Stephen Moffat plus 2.5 Shutigatwa killing it equals 5. Why the heck didn't we see River Song out of 5?
Well, we're spoilers. Saving it.
I'm just saying.
Yes.
It was Stephen Moffat. I wanted River Song there, but I still got 5. So that's all that matters. All right. So everyone in the chat, thank you for joining us. This was a lively discussion. Glad to have you here. As Lee likes to say, you could have been doing something else and you chose to spend the time with us. And yes, Nicole, we did mention the twist of Susan twist.
It's my video twist.
And it's a video twist. Yeah.
And as Lee said in our Discord channel, there's always a twist in the middle, question mark?
Yeah, this time we got a twist in the middle.
Or at the beginning, okay. Actually. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, we've always said the Moffat lies. Well, RTD lied too, because he said the next time we would see Susan twist was in this next episode coming up this week. And here she was front and center in this episode. So
Whatever. Yeah.
So with that being said, for everyone listening or watching, thank you for joining us. And as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.